If you enjoy Astronomy FM Radio, please let us know with a small donation. We do rely on your support, and it's true. Every little bit counts.
AFM. You're listening to AFM Radio on astronomy.fm, around the world and beyond.
Arr. Coming up next, it's time for an AFM Radio original program, Space Pirate Radio, brought to you by the Voice of Astronomy MIDI. This is astronomy.fm.
The pirates are coming. The pirates are coming. The pirates are coming.
Arr. It's Space Pirate Radio time. Fuckos here on astronomy.fm radio. That means it is another Wednesday evening. This one happens to be May the 31st, 9 o'clock in the evening for those of us here in the eastern portion of North America, 2017 Universal Time. That would put it at 1 o'clock in the morning. That would make it June the first Thursday morning, 2017. So that means a new month. That is correct. So we're like halfway in one month and partway in another month at the same time. Sort of not. We have 1 foot in each month. How about that?
We're on the cusp, as
we
they
are.
Say in astrology.
That's right. So don't forget, everybody, our chat room is open. Come on board and join the crew of our starship Argo. By coming into the chat room, posting questions, continuing the conversation that's going on there. More than welcome to have you come on over and join us at astronomy.fm/chat, or just go to the homepage and you'll see where it says radio chat. Click on that. Either way, we'll get you to the login page. Type in a name, preferably that we can pronounce. It could be a handle. It doesn't have to be your exact name. Anything you want. And hit login and you'll be here in our chat room. If we talk about certain articles, we'll post a link in to the chat room so you can do some further reading. Of course, we also have our Space Pirate Radio Facebook page. So come on over to that, too, and you can find the links if you want to catch them a little bit later. Because we will repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. You can always catch us in the repeat. So in the meantime, we have here on board, we have me and you. We've got, hope I pronounce this right, Andre, Richie, Optronics, Glenn, Evil Spock, Twist Edge, Plaid Mac, Plaid Jones, Plaid Sister. And that's it so far. So come on over into our chat room. Glad to have you here. I think Andre's fairly new. Welcome, Andre, from the Ukraine.
Awesome.
Truly a worldwide listening audience.
Live broadcast, yes.
And live, too, yeah, like Twist Edge. She's from Canada. We've got anybody from the UK yet. Optronics is from Buenos Aires. Oh, glad to have you all here. I have half of my ancestry is Ukraine.
Yes, and my husband is one quarter Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. And they kind of got into a question about Antarctica, flying to Antarctica, which led, of course, to the thing, the movie, two movies, the 1958 version starring James Arness and the more modern one by John Carpenter. Some fun stuff. One question, like, why would they have a flamethrower in Antarctica?
Why not?
Because it's cold there.
It's really cold.
Gotta get warmed up every once in a while. Yeah. So, never know when you might need to, you know, melt the ice around your feet or something like that.
Hey, we just got joined by Shamrock and by Jerry Hubble. Welcome.
All right. Hey, Jerry, how you doing? Jerry's been on our show several times working on a remote control observatory system. And when you get some more progress, we'll have you back on again anytime. Glenn says, weren't they set in the Arctic? You know, I looked that up, and it was Antarctica. I thought it was the Arctic also.
Interesting.
At least the newer version I think I clicked on was the Antarctic. So I'll have to double check that again for the original version, but the new one was Antarctica. Jerry says he's actually running the obs right now. All right.
Very cool.
Okay. Optronics wrote, Carpenter is Antarctica. And what about the original one? Which I can't remember who did that one. I remember some of those horror writers. I can't remember think of who it was. So, well, somebody, that's what we have our chat room for and our crew for. So you can help us look stuff up like that. So look at where somebody look up where the original thing or thing from another world took place on the Earth, a 1958 version starring James Arnaz. Optronix is probably Roger Corman. That's what I was thinking of too. That's the name I was trying to pull. Probably a Roger Corman.
That was a bit before my time.
Mm-hmm. Not before mine. All right, let's do a little sun stuff. A couple reports on the sun, mostly blank.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a big active region. I forgot to wash my monitor before I could tell.
Yeah, okay, ringing endorsement, Marty.
Yeah, looks pretty blank, but when you look at it in high-intensity ultraviolet, there is a big active region almost centered on the sun right now, so that's kind of interesting. And it looks like something's starting to come around the corner, too. I thought I kind of detected a little bit of a sunspot there, maybe on the edge, just starting to come around. So keep an eye on that. It's a little bit active. Now, if you've got a hydrogen alpha filter or telescope, you might want to get a look at that with it, like today, now if possible, if you're in sunlight. And you probably will see a pretty good prominence on that edge of the sun because there is an active region right on that edge right there. Otherwise, it's generally kind of quiet. The wind speeds are pretty down at 331 kilometers per second. Rarely see it that low. Density is pretty far down at 2.57 protons per cubic centimeter. So pretty much a quiet sun. Doesn't look like much of a coronal hole to send some particles towards us.
Didn't see anything.
No. So,
of course, if you do have a hydrogen alpha telescope, you are ahead of the curve because you may have noticed in the media just in the last week, there was a big uptick of coverage relating to the Great American Solar Eclipse of 2017, which is less than 3 months away at this point.
That's right. And I only got close. I looked at the filter, buying some filter material.
Get it in gear before they run out.
I know. Well, I do have a backup plan. I have a photographic filter for my telescope, which means like the usually neutral density is like 5. This one I think is like 4, 4.5, something like that. So it's made for shooting through not visual observing, but through a camera on the back of the telescope, so that it makes it a little bit brighter, which makes it shoot a little faster. So you can get rid of some air distortion and things like that, so I can take a quicker picture. So I could use that with a moon filter in the eyepiece. So the filter that's made for photography reduces all the heat and stuff like that. So it makes it safe for a camera, but just technically a little bit too bright for visual. And I think if I really zoomed in, if I put in, like a couple hundred power, that would probably naturally dim it down. But for visually low power, I can use that filter with, say, a moon filter, and it would be safer doing visually that way. So that would be my backup plan. I still have my old glass solar filter, which I could just start dabbing with a little bit of paint on some of the pinholes.
Your solar filter is a mess, Marty.
I'm sorry.
It's a mess.
That would also be a potentially photographic one that would not be good for visual because it does have a bunch of pinholes on it.
Filled with holes, yes.
Filled with holes would be okay for a camera, except it could add a lot of glare and stuff like that, but not recommended.
Definitely not good for your eyes.
Yeah. So I looked up some filter. One company called High Point. I think that's part of the planetarium. I don't remember. Well, anyways, looks like they only sell the small stuff, which is 7.9 inches by, I don't know, 19 inches or 13 inches or something like that. I don't have that link on. So that would actually be a little too small for my scope because my scope's an 8-inch, but it's got about a 9-inch opening. My filter's got about an exactly 8-inch opening. So at 7.9 inches, I would not be able to get the filter material securely inside my frame, my existing frame. So not quite. So I'd have to go to the next size up. And I did find it at Adorama. And they've got the bigger stuff, which is half meter by 1 meter, approximately 19.7 inches by 39.4 inches. That's like only $88. So I think I'm going to go with the bigger stuff. And I'll have extra for binoculars, finder scope, stuff like that too. So I think I will go with them. Now the smaller stuff was like $37 for about one quarter this size. And this is a little bit more than double, but you get quite a bit more, like four times as much. So I think I will get the bigger sheet for $88. And if I find I don't need it all, well, maybe we can work out something with some members of the astronomy club that need some material too. Something the astronomy club might want to consider is actually getting some of this. Reselling it.
A proposal to the observatory chairman would be quite welcome because the observatory chairman and his comrades like their toys.
Mm-hmm. Which I have to put in a request to the observatory chairman to buy some stuff too for one of the telescopes.
Board meetings on Monday.
Which I'm thinking about going to.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Just might do that.
So, speaking of our astronomy club, which is the Warren Astronomical Society based out of Warren, Michigan,
USA?
We got in the papers this weekend. Yes, USA. So we were part of a wonderful 3-page special on the Great American Solar Eclipse that ran in the Detroit Free Press on Sunday.
Cool. I didn't know it was that big of an article.
It was a big spread. Beautiful full color pictures. Of course, it exists online as well with more, great full color pictures of. I was featured along with two of our past presidents, both of whom have total eclipse stories, good and bad, to share. I've never seen a total solar eclipse before, but got a few words in, and they ran a pretty cool photograph of me posing with a telescope that was used by Thomas Edison back in 1878 for that eclipse that passed through the mainland United States.
I'll see if I can get a link. Keep going.
Yep, got it in the chat room. Got it.
You ready already?
Yep, all ready to go. So, and several of other astronomers from the region, including Jack and Cecilia Brisbane, I'd like to give a shout out to them because they are donors to a big event that is hosted for the public every year in September. So they're big supporters of the Astronomy at the Beach event, and therefore really cool people. So they were featured. So it was good. It was cool, quite a good in-depth article with lots of links to NASA websites, local astronomy clubs, tips, that sort of thing.
It looked to me like they had enough information, so I didn't add any extra input to it. So similar adventures to what Ken Burton.
Yes, right down to a getting skunked in Hawaii, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes, which was kind of my fault. I chickened out. I was going to drive to the shore, to the beach, and I didn't, which I would have seen it. But I stuck around with everybody else. I came so close to going where it was more visible, but oh well. But some people did see that one. It's only people like in the main resort area that we all set up on the golf course, which was right next to the resort. So they basically opened up, the fairways for us to go on there. And there's probably a couple hundred telescopes out there and even more astronomers. And another part of our crew went on a cruise. So they were like offshore. We could kind of see them ways out there. They were able to get to see it. I don't know if they got the whole thing, but I think they got a hole in the clouds, so they were able to get to see a good portion of it. Cool. And where I was at the resort area on the golf course, got clouded out just before totality, of course, and stayed cloudy. Turns out that I later talked to a guy in town at the t-shirt shop. He says, I went out for a cigarette, and I looked up and saw it. It's like, the guy, all these, high-end amateurs, professional astronomers were out at the high-end resort area, missed it, and the guy selling t-shirts almost on the beach got to see it.
Sometimes that is just the way it goes.
That is the way it happens sometimes. But as I said to people before, I was like, well, I kind of would rather miss an eclipse in Hawaii as opposed to missing it someplace else.
Right. Right. So,
it was still a nice trip. Oh, well, that's the way it goes. Well, this one's got a better chance because it's going to go across 3,000 miles of the U.S. But there is still, obviously, weather issues that could happen at any time. Middle of August, that is hurricane season, if I recall. So there's still quite a few areas that if there's a hurricane that blows up through, that could basically bring quite a bit of cloud coming up through the Gulf of Mexico and blow some clouds up the middle of the country or even off to the eastern shore. So that's always a possibility too. So it might need to do some traveling. But when you got, you know, 3,000 miles of country to travel across, you got a much better chance of being able to hit the road. Just got to plan the weather ahead of time and give it a shot. Could always be that local cloud system that gets in your way.
Planning the weather being, you know, a big chunk of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Used to be, when we did the same thing back in 1984, it was like watching television weather channels and trying to figure out what the weather's going to be that way. This way, you know, everybody's going to have their smartphones and computers and stuff like that, so you can pretty much look up the cloud data as you're going to the eclipse path, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look up those satellite data for clouds. I'm going to head basically to my closest point south of me, which is, I think, is about 800 miles. Yeah, it might be about 800 miles, 600 miles, something like that. A good 8-hour drive, something like that. And then I'm going to head east or west, depending on where I need to go to get really away from the clouds. So that's my plan. A nomadic trip. We've been talking about this for a while. We still will, though.
Yeah, well, and of course, if you happen to get skunked this time around, 3 years from now, you're in the U.S., there's going to be another.
Yep. Got another chance. Especially when they're kind of close together like that.
Very. Especially when it's been so very, very long. Because the last time a solar eclipse passed through the mainland United States, I was not alive.
Can't remember when that was. Now, this is a total eclipse.
Yes. I've seen partials.
I went to an annual eclipse in 84, I think it was.
Yeah, those are cool, too.
Mm-hmm. And this one's kind of related to that one, except that it's full. So, be nice to see another one. If you can get here, it's definitely worth seeing. All right, how about a little roundup on what's in the sky right now, far the moon, the planets? I missed something today to check out. Regulus was going to be a third of a degree near the moon at about now this thing says 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but my star chart said it was really about 11 o'clock, which is kind of a bit of a conflict. Would have been nice to try to find Regulus really close to the moon, because it would have been easy to find the moon at that time of the day and would have had to just go, you know, a little bit north of the moon and see if I could see Regulus here. Great way of being able to spot a star. And Regulus might be bright enough to see during the daytime. So it was a possibility.
It is a bright star. It's not one of the brightest stars, but it's pretty bright.
Yep. Oh, I forgot to do that, so I don't know anybody
else. Of course, it's located nicely along the ecliptic, so it's one of the stars that does interact with the moon, at least from our perspective, fairly often.
Now, about noontime here would have put it kind of low near the eastern horizon, so it would have been a little bit of a challenge to get a view of it, but not too bad. For other parts of the world, might have had a chance of seeing it. And I think if you're down around Australia, you could have actually seen this one be in occultation. So most of the equatorial and north area, it was just close by, but around Australia, it would have been a occultation. Tomorrow, we got a first quarter moon. So kind of fading away from our deep sky weekend. I'm just going to get some more moon coming up. Let's see. Friday, we've got Venus 1.8 degrees south of the planet Uranus. So that'd be kind of nice. And Venus is getting pretty much right at greatest western elongation.
Yeah, I saw it Monday morning at dawn from Point Pelee, which is the southernmost tip of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we showed up a few minutes before 6 o'clock, which the park was not yet open, so we were basically loitering outside the gates.
Mm-hmm.
And Venus was lovely.
Yes. So
did look for Mercury, but there was a band of cloud right at the horizon, and in between how close it was to dawn and that band of cloud, no Mercury for us.
Yeah, I don't think Mercury's in a favorable position right now. I have to check my star chart here.
It was technically above the horizon, probably with a pristine horizon, a little bit more darkness, we could have seen it, but as it was, nope.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So, yeah, well, technically it's Saturday's greatest western elongation, which means it's visible in the morning at 46 degrees.
It's high up there. Yeah,
it's high up there.
It's high and it's bright.
Yep, so get a shot of Venus. You can point it out to people when you're going into work or stuff like that, too. A little bit interesting.
That bright thing in the sky. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sunday, Jupiter 2 degrees south of the moon.
Hmm.
Something to see. Well, a little bit of planetary stuff with the moon happening lately. This is all from the Astronomical Almanac Online. I'll put that link into our chat room here. Go grab that. There you go. Right in the homepage. A lot of good information from the Astronomical Almanac.
Cool. Mm-hmm. We also think we saw an iridium flare. My husband and me were observing at dawn, and we saw something very bright.
Oh, nice.
That was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
It disappeared.
Another thing to shoot for is a launch coming up. Is that tomorrow? I think it is. Let me go back to the NASA homepage here. Cargo resupply mission to the International Space Station.
Whose craft are they using?
It is SpaceX.
Ah, ha, ha.
Thursday, June 1st at 5:55 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So let's see, Universal Time, we're like 4 hours. So that would be 1:55 Universal Time.
This SpaceX flight is kind of important to SpaceX and to the future of manned spaceflight potentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's a refurbished Dragon capsule.
Mm.
So it's already been up there once. Oh, yes. So this is, they are testing how reusable their Dragon capsule is.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You can find this at the NASA homepage at www.nasa.gov. Or just type in NASA to search engine. It'll pop you right to the homepage for pretty much the most part. NASA is going to head to the sun.
Ah, yes, indeed. And it's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So what is cool about it?
Well, kind of hot, actually.
Yeah, okay. The mission is cool. But the sun,
gonna
yes,
go,
the
they're
sun
They're going to go at
hot.
Nighttime, so it won't be so bad.
Okay, so what's up with this? So the mission is going to involve, quote-unquote, touching the solar atmosphere. So that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the probe's name is important.
Mm-hmm.
It is named for the astrophysicist who first proposed the theory of the solar wind that Marty updates us on every week. Eugene Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, okay, so it's named for somebody. All right. Well, there have been things named for people. What's important about that? He's still alive. That is unusual. He will be 90 shortly, and he is alive to have a probe named for him because of accomplishments that started more than 50 years ago. That's very nice.
It is. So check it out. When's this launch going to be? 2018.
Yeah, it's a little while off, but not too far off. I mean, sometimes we brief you all on missions that aren't taken off until the mid-2020s.
Mm-hmm.
But the Parker Solar Probe should be going up next year.
Yep.
And should be very interesting. And hopefully, Eugene Parker will be around for the liftoff. But at the very least, he knows NASA is honoring his lifetime worth of accomplishments.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to fly to within about 4 million miles of the photosphere of the sun. if I recall. That'd be pretty nice to actually capture some close up pieces of the sun. I think is it part of a capture thing or an analyzing the light type of thing? I'm trying to remember what they said about it.
Let's see. It's got, as many probes do, it's got several different science instruments. So it's got magnetometers. It has a device to measure the electrons, protons, and heavy ions that will be coming out of the sun. It's got a wide-field imager. And it has some instruments to measure the density and velocity of the electrons, the protons, and also the helium ions coming off the sun.
Okay. It's got sensors.
It's got a suite of instruments.
Mm-hmm. So not just looking at the light, but technically picking up pieces of it.
Yeah. It's going to be investigating it down to the atomic level, looking for those helium ions.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, well, subatomic level, actually, since it's looking at electrons.
Mm-hmm. Ah, some of the latest pictures of Jupiter.
Yeah.
Pretty spectacular from the Juno mission. I do believe this is a composite image because it shows, which pole is it? South pole of Jupiter? Let's see. South pole, yep. It has to be a composite because half the South Pole would be covered in nighttime. So what does it say? Three separate orbits combined to show all areas in daylight. So kind of as close as you can get. Now the orbits are kind of spread out by quite a few weeks, if I recall. So it's kind of a composite and kind of probably a little bit of a guesstimate too on exactly what it looks like. So you can't. Things change in Jupiter, and that they orbit around, they swirl around, and they twist and turn, and they change. So sometimes kind of slowly, sometimes a little bit more rapidly. So probably had to adjust it so it wouldn't look like there's a bunch of gaps or edges, and when you combine images and stuff like that. So,
well, these images are absolutely stunning. I mean, it looks like basically the main thing it made me think of is agate.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
these
true.
Amazing swirls with these tints of. Sometimes when you're fortunate to be observing Jupiter from here from Earth, you know, with your eyeball, you might see these tints of not just the familiar salmon and cream and orange, but little bits of blue and brown, and these wonderful swirls and whorls and things that look like tree rings are all sorts of shades of brown and cream and tints of blue, and it's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, mission for people, if you're also like us geeky types, go to rock and mineral shows. Now, the challenge would be to look for an agate that looks like Jupiter. I've got one that kind of looks like the sun in kind of cloudy haze, stuff like that. So, and one that's kind of like moon tinted, something like that, moon in haze too. So now I'm going to be on a mission too for some rock and mineral shows, which we have kind of a big one every fall here in Michigan,
yes.
Detroit area. So I'm going to have to go look for some of these. Now sometimes they dye the agates.
Yes.
I wonder if I could find somebody that could actually sort of dye the center portion. Leave the outer portion. I think it dye like the center blue and leave the outer portion whiter. And if it has enough swirls and stuff like that, that would be kind of interesting. Well, or maybe somebody could make some Jupiter agates.
You know what? We do have some mineralogically talented friends in our astronomy club that might be able to set you up with something like that, Marty. I have some names.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned public participation. One thing to mention about Juno is that Juno Cam, one of the instruments on the Juno probe, it has a public outreach camera. And amateurs have been processing the raw data into these amazing images. So there is a major and essential public participation in the science of processing this data into these gorgeous pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get involved in making pretty pictures out of Jupiter, check it out.
Yes, indeed. Got something related to Jupiter, but we'll do it in just a couple of minutes because you are listening to Space Pirate Radio here on astronomy.fm. We're halfway through our program already, so that makes it 9:30 in the evening for those of us here in the eastern portion of North America on May the 31st, 2017. So universal time would be 1:30 on June the 1st, 2017. Halfway through our program. If you missed the first half, don't forget, we're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours, so you can catch it. Let's see, and coming up, of course, after Space Pirate Radio, we have Astronomy Ireland, and let's double-checking here, maybe before Astronomy Ireland will be Comet Watch. I'm trying to check from our radio director. Let's see, I can't tell. Okay, so maybe... Yes, Comet Watch would be first, and then Astronomy Ireland afterwards, coming up right after Space Pirate Radio, so you can continue on listening in. And don't forget, we've got our chat room open right now, so when you come into the chat room, we consider you part of our crew on our Starship Argo. And so far, we've got me and you, Andre, Richie, Optronics, Glenn, Evil Spock, Twist Edge, Plaid Mac, Plaid Joan, Plaid Sister, Shamrock, Jerry Hubble, and Doug from the Northern Cross Observatory. Glad to have you all here in tonight. Hope you're all enjoying your evening or daytime, depending on where you're listening in from. Let's continue. All kinds of stuff. I got an article. If I can find it. I had it. And where did it go? It was related to Jupiter. Possibly a... Not possibly. Definitely a white flash seen in front of Jupiter.
Have you got that in front of you then?
Yes, I do. Here we go. Put it into our chat room here.
I was going to say, we've got a question about Enceladus.
Okay, yes, we do. We'll get onto that one too. We read this article kind of quickly, but they said it one way. I don't know if this is confirmed. I don't like doing it this way. The title of the article is New Impact Flash Seen on Jupiter. I prefer to say a flash seen in front of Jupiter.
Okay.
Until it's confirmed. You need multiple observers.
True.
In order to confirm that this is an event at the distance of Jupiter. So if somebody else was imaging it at the exact same time here on the Earth, imaging Jupiter, and did not catch the flash, that means it was something intervening between the observer and Jupiter. For instance, a Earth-orbiting satellite is always a possibility, or something similar to that.
Now, it looks like there was at least one confirmation. So the original observation was from Corsica, and it appears that there is a confirmation from Germany.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that this one is probably exactly what we think it is, which is a flash on the in the atmosphere, rather, of Jupiter.
Of Jupiter. Okay. Let's see when the date was this seen. That was way high in the northern section of Jupiter.
Very high. Yep. Well past the all the big bands.
Mm-hmm. It was at May the 26th, a few days ago, between right around 19 hours, 24.6 minutes approximately, universal time. So that would indicate, yes, being viewed from a couple different angles, it would indicate, yes, there was a flash, which probably indicates an impact into the atmosphere of Jupiter. Now, depending on the type of material, how big it was, would determine if it left an impact mark. And so far, there is no signs of any impact signal on Jupiter, no debris,
no scars,
no dark patches, things like that on Jupiter. People have been looking at that region again and have not seen any indication that it actually left some debris, dust basically, in the clouds of Jupiter. So something hit it. Could have been more. Well, even cometary has left debris before. Shoemaker-Levy 9 was comets, ice balls basically, and those definitely left debris. Traveling really fast, doesn't take much to make a nice bright spot, so it could have been something a little bit smaller.
Of course, the Jovian atmosphere is extremely thick.
Yes, but starts out kind of thin, like
yes.
most atmosphere. So now I don't want to say if it was a denser material, would it maybe have flashed and then punctured without, you know, spreading out? We know that cometary material can, like, you know, spread out, kind of break up in impact, and that could maybe leave more debris. Maybe this is a little bit more solid and certainly probably a little smaller. So just enough to leave a little flash mark, but then, you know, keep on going below the cloud level, not leave anything on top. Keep watching Jupiter. I keep telling everybody this, yes, as much as you can, not just watch it, but if you videotape it. And then even just let your telescope go for a little while if you can, and with videotaping it, and then review the videotape on higher speeds and see if you see something flash on it. You might be a co-discoverer. Now, this was like 4 days ago.
Yes.
Five days ago, something like that. So obviously, if it left a mark, they would have seen it by now, because
generally, rotates. Those fade pretty fast. Yes, yeah, it rotates at 10 hours.
Yep.
And
at least in the midsection, a little slower near the pole. I don't think they've got a rotation rate at that latitude. Definitely rotates slower the more you get towards the pole. But definitely would have been probably a couple of rotations a day. Or even if there was just one rotation a day at that level, that's still 4 days worth of rotation. So wouldn't have been too much of a problem being able to image that area again. And they haven't seen anything. So keep observing Jupiter. It's easy to see out there in the evening skies.
Oh,
after the
yeah.
sun goes down. Well placed this time of the year. Yep. Get to look at its moons changing positions all the time. And speaking of its moons, yeah, what was that? Enceladus. Here's an article.
Wrong planet, but definitely a moon. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we did get a request from Optronics to brief y'all on Enceladus and what's been going on.
Saturn.
Yes, Cassini data. So Cassini, it's doing its extended swan song as the mission winds down, but it's got some interesting new thoughts about Enceladus, which is the small icy moon that is notable for its geysers and jets of water vapor.
Mm-hmm.
So Enceladus is interesting in that the South Pole is active and appears to be geologically young, by which we mean not a lot of craters. Something's resurfaced it repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the North appears to be much older surface terrain, you might say. Of course, terrain means Earth, but obviously, it's not Earth. Okay, this surface, filled with craters.
Mm-hmm.
So, through some process, might have been an impact, might not have been an impact. Enceladus had its mass redistributed. That made its rotation get wobbly. And when it restabilized, a process that could have taken a million years or more, the north-south axis wasn't going exactly where it was before. North was not quite where it had been. South was not quite where it had been. It's called polar wander. So we think that the weirdness of the two poles being so strikingly different is caused by the poles literally relocating. Possibly the result of an asteroid whack.
Now, this is judging by the data that they're seeing on Enceladus.
Yeah.
Not that it's actually moved from like a before and after picture.
Of course, no. Yeah, we don't have any before pictures from, you know, more than a million years prior to the polar wander settling down. Yeah.
Yes, the article does say in the distant past.
Yes. No humans, no cameras, no space probes, no nothing. Mm-hmm. We are reconstructing the crime scene here.
Mm-hmm. So that's what's up with Enceladus around Saturn. Let's see. We got some stuff on the moon, too.
Mm.
We have maybe some new evidence for frost on the moon.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed. Let me put this article here. I think I... From Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. There we go. We put it into our chat room here. Coming up. And in there. Yeah, there we go. Don't forget, if you're not in, our chat room and you're not, you know, obviously catching these links, you can pick up these links on our, are they on our astronomy.fm page? I know they're on the Space Pirate.
Facebook page. Space Pirate Radio.
Facebook page. Yes, indeed. So you can catch those links there and relook them up too. So. And there's a lot of these are actually, the articles get around to a lot of current astronomical publications of various types. So once NASA publishes something, then a lot of news agencies pick them up too. So you get multiple areas that you could actually go look them up at.
But this particular story that you've got here, Marty, is straight from NASA.gov itself. So what's new on the moon?
Potentially a little bit of frost. Icy deposits appear, I'll kind of read the beginning of the article. Icy deposits be patchy and thin, and it's possible they are mixed in with surface layer soil, dust, and small rocks called regolith.
Yep.
Researchers say they're not seeing expanses of ice similar to frozen pond or skating rink. Instead, they are seeing signs of surface frost.
Well, that's still really cool. I mean, especially given that it was not that very many years ago that there was a debate over whether there was any sort of water on the moon at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, the moon is bone dry. Okay, clearly not.
I think, and the evidence comes from, let me read this line from them too. It comes from an analysis that combined surface temperatures with information about how much light is reflected off the moon's surface. So in other words, it's a little too shiny to be regular moon dirt.
That makes sense because, of course, the moon, as white as it might appear to our eyeballs when the sun's rays are bouncing off, it's very dark.
It is.
It's not very reflective.
Looking at asphalt.
Yes. So pencil lead graphite. Yeah.
Yeah. So asphalt's actually pretty dark when you really think about it, which when a lot of sunlight shining, especially when the sunlight reflects off the asphalt, it doesn't look so dark. And then at different angles, it'll look, you know, brighter or darker, depending on the sunlight. If it's really reflecting sunlight right off at the right angle, it looks pretty bright. It looks about as bright as concrete. But then, like nighttime, when it's wet, it looks pretty dark.
Oh, yeah. Now, there is an interesting line near the end of the article, which is, of course, that water, ice, and other deposits have also been identified thanks to the Messenger mission around at the North Pole of the planet Mercury. And though it is extremely close to the sun, the closest planet to the sun, Mercury seems to have up to 400 times more ice than is estimated to be on the moon. And right now, scientists are trying to sift out which scenario is closer to normal.
Interesting.
Yes. Interesting.
So I'm thinking in order to go to Mars first, we need to go to Mercury first and live there.
No, thanks.
Where all the water's at? No.
Yeah, all the water's in at the North Pole.
Set up a colony.
Yeah. Okay. For one thing, Marty, you know, it is difficult to get to Mercury.
Well, yeah.
It's hard.
You have to go really fast in the opposite orbital direction.
Yeah. You generally have to slingshot around Venus a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
It's tricky to go to Mercury because you do going to Mercury wrong, you end up in the sun.
Depending on the angle you catch up to Mercury at, so not necessarily.
Yeah, or
but maybe.
You get slingshot to places you don't want to go.
Mm-hmm. Like Mars.
Accidentally on Mars, yes.
There you go. Shoot for Mercury, end up on Mars. Sounds like a 1950s movie. Space travel movie.
Oh, dear. Yeah, you've got a point there.
Mm-hmm. They get lost in the galaxy, they call it, by going from one planet in the solar system to another planet, and all of a sudden they're lost in the galaxy. Can't find their way home because nobody knows where the sun is in the solar system, right?
Oops.
Those old shows were funny. They got the science so far off. Aliens coming from another galaxy, they traveled a billion miles to get here. No, that would make it Saturn. I've heard that.
That's
we come
a good
from
point.
A, I've heard that. We've come from out. A planet over a billion miles away. Like, you mean Saturn?
Sure. Saturn's cool.
Mm-hmm. That'd be funny to throw that back at the old movies, stuff like that. Well, that'd be fun to just re-edit one of those old movies, make one of those characters say that.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's time for astronomers to do a sort of a Mystery Science Theater 3000 takeoff and sit there, watch an old movie, and shout at the screen.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Oh, let's see what we got coming up here. Oh, let's see. This is, I'm going to go with AAVSO.
Mm.
A couple things happening. AAVSO alert notice. This one's not quite so exciting because it's kind of dim. Alert notice 580. Let me put that into our chat room. Here it comes. Monitoring a star. Where we go again? Okay. Let's see. It's a helium dwarf nova that they want.
What?
That they want monitored. Yes.
Okay.
I thought this was really bad, but it's not so bad. The star kind of gotten brighter, and then it dimmed back down, and it looks like it's getting brighter again. Now, normally it is pretty bad. It's down like 19th magnitude.
That's pretty bad, yeah.
But it gets up to 16th magnitude.
Okay.
So photographically, that's not too bad at all.
No.
Should have almost no problem. Anybody with a decent sized telescope and doing some, combining some images should be able to pick up 16th magnitude. So they're looking for people to image and observe this star and see if it's actually getting brighter and monitor its brightness. So go to the AAVSO, American Association of Variable Star Observers, and see if you can help out with this project.
Yeah, the request is specifically, if it's possible, to do nightly snapshots for 2 weeks after this star fades back down, just in case it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
I had another article. There was a couple of them that were getting a little confusing on me. Is this star another star that's getting bright? Oh, they want observing not AAVSO, but another. Where did that go? Another star called PDS 110. Where was that article from? Let's see. Sorry. I had the article and then I kind of lost it. And let's see. It's a star that's going to be brightened, going to be dimming. I don't have quite the article. Maybe I'll find it in a little bit. Maybe somebody could look it up for us while we're talking about it. It was in one of the regular astronomical publications, so you might be able to find it pretty easily. This star is expected to be dimming down again. It's thought to be a star that has a fair... this is a fairly young star with a really large gas giant orbiting around it, and the gas giant is supposed to have a really large ring around it. So like a mega Saturn. I think the planet's going to be like 50 times the size of Jupiter. And
50 times the size of Jupiter.
Yes.
Okay.
Doesn't mean 50 times the mass, but 50 times the size.
No, or we'd be dealing with a star here.
Yes. So with a big, huge ring around it, and I think it dims down about every 800 days.
Okay.
So expected to dim down again sometime in September. And it's in the constellation of Orion. So it's a fairly young star because that's like kind of a star-forming region all through Orion there. It's actually kind of near Mintaka, which is the western belt star of Orion.
Okay, you got a legit source on this, because the first article I found was the Daily Mail, and we don't share that here.
I am trying to find where I get that link from. Let me try this one right here. Let's see a second here.
I mean, it was a very catchy headline about the giant rings of a mega Saturn 400 light years from Earth, but I'm still not clicking on it.
Okay, here it comes.
Very good.
This is from SciTech Daily.
Cool.
Now, let's see. I got a couple of... Okay, this one, Orion. Oh, by the way, that AAVSO star...
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention, that was strictly for Southern Hemisphere observers.
It's from...
the constellation of Pavo.
Pavo the Peacock, yes.
Yes. 18 hours right ascension and like minus 73 degrees. So strictly Southern Hemisphere observers for that one.
Yes, I had noticed that the major observations of it so far were coming from La Silla in Chile. Mm-hmm.
Now, this article didn't actually give coordinates, so I had to find out where it was actually at. So I started searching. It has a couple of different designations. One of them is PDS 110. I don't know I don't know what PDS that stands for. Another designation of HD 29380. So I'm trying to find that designation for its coordinates, and then I came across this article, Reddit, which doesn't count. Well, anyways, it also says KIC 8462852. Now, if you're familiar with that kind of a familiar sounding KIC designation, that was for Tavistar. Mm-hmm. So the article was comparing Tavistar to this star. But the way the link looked like, it was the same designation. So I was trying to find, the coordinates for the star, and it popped up Tavistar. So I ended up tracing down Tavistar coordinates for 20 minutes, and then finally figured out, no, that's not right. They said this star is in Orion, and then Tavistar was in Cygnus. It's like, what is going wrong here? So I'm like, yeah, about a half hour before the show, trying to figure out where this thing is at, and finally got it figured out that its coordinates are 5 hours 23 minutes, approximately minus 1 degree declination. I don't remember if I got the magnitude of this one. I thought this was about 11th magnitude, something like that. It's going to dim down. Anything in that article on how much it's going to dim down? So, anyways, something that can be observed by amateur astronomers. And I said it's going to be in September when they expect it, the next dimming to occur. They're trying to figure out what's going on with the system and why it's dimming down. And the reasons they were comparing this to Tavistar, well, this is a fairly new star, just like a couple million years old, a lot of that in the area of Orion, and Tavistar is like a billion years old, so it's a much older star system,
which makes the whole thing about Tavistar much weirder.
Yes, definitely weirder. So this would kind of make sense that there's maybe like a protoplanet with a, you know, a thick ring system around it, and it's fairly new, so maybe that protoplanet hasn't really stabilized, or maybe it's still going to thin out quite a bit, and maybe the rings will either become moons or dissipate, or, you know, feed in some other planets.
The whole system is a work in progress at this point.
Definitely a work in progress, yeah. So this is a much, much younger system compared to the Tavistar system. So a little easier to kind of figure out what some of the stuff is. You know, especially if they can see it in the infrared, then they know a lot of the stuff is dust, which they're not getting from the Tavistar thing. So, something to observe. I looked it up, and pretty much the sun is, you know, a few degrees away from this in Taurus right now. So, good thing they said it's going to be in September. So, you'll be able to see Orion in September pretty late at night to early morning, about that time. So, not good for observing right now. Something to keep on your list of things to observe. And write this down. And it was quite a challenge figuring out where the coordinates for this thing was. Oh, that's the way it goes. And then I get the coordinates, and I go onto my my star chart of Stellarium, and I pop up a grid and figure out where stuff's at. The only thing it doesn't have, which I noticed, is constellation boundaries.
Ooh, well, that could be relevant.
Yeah, it'll do like some, you know, the stick.
Yeah, stick figure lines patterns.
Of drawing from a couple of stars, and then it will. You can also put the artwork over it, so that it will, you know, give you the general constellation name, stuff like that. But it doesn't give me the actual boundary. So if it's not in Pavo, it's really close because it's also right next to, was it Ara or something like that? It's like was another bird constellation down there. The Southern Hemisphere there. So it's on the borderline between those two constellations, so I can't say for sure it's in Pavo, but it's really close to Pavo, but it could also be in the one that's right next to it too, which right now I don't have that constellation that might be.
We've got a little brief story about the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is in brief. He got hit by a speeding bullet and survived.
Yeah, I wanted to apologize for that. Yeah, we were flying our pirate ship close around the moon and heard this little bump. So, oh, did we run over something? And there was this little NASA probe kind of, you know, off in the distance. I'm sorry. This is not much more than like a shopping cart kind of bump in the parking lot. You know?
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. So it was hit by a 0.08 millimeter meteoroid with a density of about 2.7 grams per cubic centimeter going at about 7 kilometers a second. So, yes, hit by the proverbial speeding bullet in space. And it's fine. It's fine. And its camera captured the event.
Now, it looks like it was not the probe that was hit, but it was the actual individual camera. There's more than one camera there. I think there's like
the
two
left
or three.
Narrow angle camera got whacked.
Mm-hmm. Enough to shake the camera, but not the entire satellite and not the other cameras. So just the one. You could actually see the image where it was kind of shaking back and forth for a little bit there. So.
Of course, a meteoroid impact is one of those things that scientists really don't want to happen to their spacecraft. And this time, it all turned out okay.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's why your picture looks a little fuzzy. Like a lot of astronomy pictures, actually. Somebody, you know, you taking a picture of something and you kick the tripod because it's dark out, and you get stars that look like a UFO because they're all jiggly.
Well, speaking of pictures, we've got something weird.
Okay.
Now, it has been thought that black holes are created by supernova explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hubble Space Telescope may have captured a star collapsing directly into a black hole without the supernova.
Mm-hmm.
This is in, we talked to you last week about the Fireworks Galaxy, which had a supernova going on last week.
Mm-hmm.
Fireworks Galaxy is known for a lot of supernovae. But in the Fireworks Galaxy earlier, it appears that a massive star brightened briefly in an event similar to a supernova and then disappeared without the telltale signs of an actual supernova explosion.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of, didn't it last a little longer than a usual supernova too?
Yeah.
The brightening?
It's an interesting article to read in depth and sort of process all of the ways in which this is weird.
Mm-hmm. Trying to find this article here. Pop it into our chat.
I got one from Sky Intel, yeah.
Okay, pop that in there.
Here you go.
Alrighty. I'll flip back on this. Yeah, it's been around in several different articles. It was kind of strange. And this was several years ago, I think, wasn't it?
Quite a few, yeah. So
yeah,
the original image of the star, which is 25 solar masses, back in 2007. And mm-hmm. then it seemed to have vanished by 2015,
mm-hmm.
leaving a faint infrared glow that might be debris falling into the black hole.
And it was also not as bright as a supernova.
Yep.
Which is usually, you know, way outshines the galaxy itself. So this was a little dimmer. And it didn't brighten the way a usual supernova does and didn't dim the way a usual supernova does. And they're not getting the information out of the galaxy in that area like a normal supernova. Could be a couple different things. They're still checking out if it really did collapse into a black hole, or if it just kind of, if it got shrouded by a lot of material that's actually keeping it dark.
But right now we don't know, and
mm-hmm.
that's about all the time we have for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna leave you on a cliffhanger with the failed supernova in the Fireworks Galaxy.
That's right. So maybe a percentage of supernovas don't go kablooey. They just go, and that's it.
It's a mystery.
All right. Well, thank everybody that's been in our chat room tonight.
Yeah, really, chat room was packed. Thanks for joining us.
Don't forget, we're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. And we got Comet Watch and Astronomy Ireland coming up. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Clear skies, y'all.
We hope that you've enjoyed this program from AFM Radio, the broadcast service of astronomy.fm. This program has been released under Creative Commons license. Please contact us for details. You may find more of our AFM original programs on our website. It's really easy to find us. We are astronomy.fm. You may also find us in the iTunes radio listings near the top of the News Talk section, and also as an iTunes podcast selection. We'd love to hear your comments. Please email us at radio@astronomy.fm. Thanks so much for being part of the voice of astronomy around the world and across the known universe. This is astronomy.fm radio.
AFM.